I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse Professor Martin Drum from Notre Dame University here in Fremantle today, Martin, I think.
Indeed, beautiful Fremantle. I think it's going to be a bit of a warm one today. High 30s.
Well, tell me about it, Martin. We should be down at the beach, but here we are talking about things that are actually quite important. We've labelled today's chat topic the budget and the Iran war, all sort of in uppercase, or the Iran war and the budget. But before we do that, we should give our South Australian listeners an early thumbs up, not just a prediction, but I think an actuality, Martin. Labor's set for a landslide in the state election tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that will really happen. And the polls suggesting that, and sometimes you measure up the polls with what you're seeing in the narrative from South Australia. And Malinowski seems very confident. The Liberals are really on the back foot. They're quite worried. And the action is going to be in the Conservative seats, Michael, there in South Australia. Can the Liberals hold on to them against Labor in one hand, for some of those city seats? But perhaps One Nation, maybe they can pinch a seat or two in regional areas. It's
Well,
going to be a bad day for the South Australian Liberals, I suspect.
It's not going to be good. They're predicting that Labor will win all the metropolitan seats, as you say, that One Nation might actually get over the Libs. It's who comes second. Not that they'll be close to first by any measure. And what about the upper house?
Yeah, I think the upper house, it's proportional. So you're going to get a smattering of parties there. I think it's certain One Nation will get a seat or two. Again, Labor will pick up most of those seats, but whether they get a majority is another matter, because it's a bit like the upper house here. You've got to get about 51%, which is not easy.
It will be interesting to see what the numbers in the South Australian upper house are after the election. It could be a little bit like what happened here in Western Australia, where the Greens got a degree of balance of power, Martin.
That's right. Well, it's I would say probably on balance, they won't get the Labor won't have a double majority, i.e. majority in the upper house. But we'll see. There'll be other minor parties featuring as well.
Well, Martin, let's turn to the real topic of the day. And as I say, you can put this either way you like. We could talk ad nauseum about the Iran war, which doesn't seem to get any better by the moment, whether it was Israel with the US awareness or knowledge that bombed the gas fields, or whether Trump's right when he said we didn't know anything. Although strangely, I remember, if not commenting upon it, reading that a story that said the US knew about the idea but told Israel not to do it, but they did it anyway, which indicates knowledge but not consent, I suppose, if that were the true story. But it's all there. Saudi Arabia, a knife edge, the Gulf states are generally feeling in a tricky position. The whole thing could go really bad. And if you look at the vision that's available, for example, on the New York Times, but elsewhere, it's burning. It's like out of a bad movie, Martin. And in the middle of all of this, with the price of oil going up, 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 people not prepared to do anything. I've cancelled my plans in a month's time. I was going to be flying to France, but I've cancelled it. I don't feel safe. And the Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, has to produce a budget for early May. What will he be thinking? Will he be wanting to go on a holiday and leave it to someone else?
Well, all of these things are linked, of course. I mean, you raised two profound issues, the Iran war and, of course, the budget here in Australia. I'll start with the Iran war very briefly, Michael. I thought the developments just in the last day or two, where we're seeing gas fields targeted in Iran and then a retaliation against Qatar, as quite troubling. Not that all of it's not troubling, Michael, but in a new way. And that's energy infrastructure being wiped out and destroyed. And that's going to take years to rebuild. There's a difference with the Strait of Hormuz. If that's shut, that's a problem, but it can be reopened and supply will continue. You start destroying the infrastructure, that's another whole level. And I think that concerns a lot of people in the US, and that's where Trump's pulling back there. And I think it shows some divergence in the aims of Israel and the US too. We saw this, I don't know if you saw, there were some comments this morning from the spokesperson for Netanyahu, who seems to be pursuing regime change. And the US is pulling back from that. because I know it's harder than it looks. And that itself, if there's a major difference in what those two allies are talking about there, I suspect.
And as I say, while all that's happening, everyone's looking at the world economy, and Chalmers will be looking at our economy. And this is when economists start talking about something that sounds like a new dance, stagflation, Martin.
You know, that's a term from the 1970s, Michael.
Well, in that case, it probably was a dance, Martin. This is where inflation rises at the same time as growth slows. It's not what you want, Martin.
It's the worst of both worlds. They say that inflation is one of the hardest things for governments to deal with because the cost of living goes up. And then the pressure is on governments to provide relief against the cost of living through, subsidies for electricity or this, that, and the other. But every bit of money that the government injects into the economy stimulates the economy and then contributes to inflation. So it's actually one of the hardest things for governments to act on. And that's the wicked problem that Chalmers finds himself with, because he knows that households are doing it tough, but he can't throw that much money at them in many ways. We are seeing some. I think we can be reasonably confident from the whispers and the narratives that the government is going to take some action against investors in houses making money out of investment houses. So the gains they make on their investments, I think that's a real possibility. But some of the other ones, the measures that he's considering, remain a bit of a mystery at the moment as he mulls up a range of different options. To try and deal with this. It's not an easy one.
It may strangely be that in these very difficult economic and security times, that Labor might be able to act more boldly on the sort of capital gains, negative gearing, revenue fronts, wealth tax type issues. But just staying with household cost of living, Martin, if you've got a petrol car like I don't have, did you realise I hadn't? That unleaded petrol prices in Perth have increased from $1.56 a litre in mid-February to $2.26 a litre just now, a 45% increase nearly within 4 weeks. I mean, it's the sort of thing when you put it on the front page of the Fremantle Shipping News, it'll send people spare.
I think that's a shocking increase for a lot of households, and whilst many of us would like to move away from, the consumption of fossil fuels, etc., that's just not how it is for many households. It's not as simple as that, and they've just got to cop it. If you're a tradie or someone like that, and you need your vehicle to get from A to B, there's a lot of people affected by this, and. It's not clear the end's in sight. I still think probably Trump at some stage, my view on this, will pull back. But for the time being, this is a pretty horrific reality for many people.
Well, one of the problems is when you take into account my sort of consumer response to going on a European holiday and pulling the pin on it, people are going to start spending less. They're going to be a little bit uncertain. And that was the initial fear if we go back to when the COVID virus hit the world. People took a deep breath. They sort of stepped indoors and asked themselves, what are we going to do? And yet, at the same time, with the security demand, the pressure on the federal government to spend more money, Martin, on defence, is there, apart from anything else.
I think that's still going to be continue, and all of these different events that we've seen in the last year, year and a half, only add flames to that. So Australia needs to start looking to its own sovereign capacity and what it can and can't do itself, because the reality of international alliances, they're a lot more unpredictable than they've been in the past. So I think this will probably confirm that move, if anything.
Martin, there's a whole range of sort of budgetary measures that have already been announced, have taken place or are about to take place. We know there are some legislated income tax that are due to kick in July. No government's going to take them away. Superannuation reforms are being put into place. That's meant to raise more revenue so that people with huge million dollar superannuation accounts can't just sit on them. And we come back to the capital gains tax reform issues once again that were brought in by John Howard look like probably being modified.
Yeah, and they collectively they add up to some significant reform. I think there's a lot of people would like to see reforms go further, particularly around the housing area, but also around that overall intergenerational inequity that we see that's already there through the accumulation of wealth and assets, but is exacerbated by taxation. So I think that there's probably more that could be done, but even so, some of those reforms are significant, and the tax relief will help people. It's probably already been wiped out, though, Michael, by these fuel increases.
It's just hellish. You call this policy issue before a wicked one, Martin. You really would not want to be Jim Chalmers right now. Although his doctorate's in economics and he loves this stuff, and you'll want to have a chapter devoted to him and what he did during this period in textbooks in year to come. But, well, one hell of a job. What do you think he's going to do? I suppose he has to provide cost of living relief as well as try and take hold of some progressive structural measures like the CGT reform.
Yeah, I think you're going to see that. That's going to result in some more income for the federal government, some revenue. But on the other hand, I think that there's got to be some compensation or some measures for households, which will probably more than take that away. He'll probably look for relief for households, which is not structural. Just for listeners, that means if you lower the tax rate, you can't up the tax rate very easily. So he won't do something like that, which is a long-term measure that costs the government, but he might try some short-term relief to the cost of living that helps. Bear in mind, he's going to cop it if there's further interest rate rises because of overstimulated economy. He doesn't want to be the person that's contributing to that. And so it is a fine line for him, but I think there's still some scope for him to find ways to help households out.
So the Reserve Bank, just by a majority, up the interest rates the other day. They'll be under great pressure, Martin, here on in, probably for the rest of the year to try and keep a lid on them.
Yeah, well, this one was quite interesting. It was 5-4 in favour of raising interest rates, and we've got the arguments from the Reserve Bank governor for and against. Actually, quite enjoyed for economics nuffies. I think that she's been more transparent than previous governors perhaps have. And so she's outlined the reasons why it was required for the five, but then also explained why it was a divided board, which I think is quite interesting there. And what it sort of shows is for the people that the reason why they put it up was that they were worried, even without the Iranian conflict, about too much money in the economy and inflation. But the four that voted against it were of a mindset to leave it a bit longer because of so much uncertainty. And they were inclined to get more information. So there are two different, completely different strands of thoughts here.
Were you more convinced by one strand than the other?
I think probably, now this sounds really harsh, but you've got to get inflation under control, and it's probably better off you raise it now and you try to avoid interest rate rises for as much of the rest of the year as you can, then sit on it too long. If the bank's information was that there was underlying problems with inflation in the economy that were domestic, Michael, then they probably felt the need to step in now.
Some of the big questions, really interesting questions, Martin. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Jim Chalmers said, all right, I'm going to do the negative gearing reforms that people have been arguing about for quite some time. This is as good a time as any. Not only do we have a big mandate after the last election, but the world's in this turmoil. It needs some bold policy action. We're going to have to deal with this housing. We have to build houses, and that's difficult. It's made even more difficult because getting supplies into Australia at the moment with this Iran war going on isn't easy. Don't you reckon he might just do it?
Well, there'll be a temptation, particularly if you can tailor it in such a way so that it's targeting towards existing housing, abolishing negative gearing, and still is an option for new housing, because that way you're getting investing in new housing, because we know that there's a supply side issue. So if it was a smart and targeted measure, I think it could really help.
a toe or two in the water. I mean, at the same time, as I say, getting things into the country, even electric vehicles, I suppose, but there'd be a bit of a push to be more radical, and probably through tax measures as well, to go electric, to get off fossil fuels, Martin, to get off gas.
Well, apparently, EV sales have soared again, which doesn't surprise me at all. And disclo for full disclosure, I've got an electric vehicle, Michael, and I'm very pleased about that fact at the moment. I think there's a lot of people who are already looking in that direction, and that's accelerated that. There is a need to keep looking after people that have petrol vehicles though, because it's hardest for low income houses to make that transition. So you've got to be very mindful of that fact and look after those people that are not necessarily in a position to do that.
Yes, I make the same disclosure, Martin, of course. And neither you nor I can tell the listeners are looking all that smug at them. Well, you are at the moment. But it
You've got
does,
to
I
avoid
agree.
smugness. Avoid smugness.
Avoid smugness, that brings on hubris. Martin, the point you make, that's a very good one, because where does the fuel come from? How many refineries do we have here? There's a whole lot of finger pointing at the moment about who closed them down in Australia. Stuff's coming in, not probably in the same volumes, but we've now got a fuel czar after the national cabinet meeting the other day, and their job is to make sure, yes, that the tradies, the essential services, and the like can actually get fuel.
Yeah, it is a big issue. I think there's a number of things that have been raised. It's probably a fair point about the depletion of the reserve fuel stock that has occurred and whether we were positioned as well as we should be for this contingency. So I think legitimate issues have been raised in that respect. The other thing about sovereign capacity is also important. So we've lost a lot of our refineries, including the refinery here in Western Australia, Michael. I think someone will correct me, it's about 10 years ago that decision was made. So that's obviously weakened our own choices in that respect as well. So don't be surprised there's an outcome of this in the next, say, 12 to 18 months that we again recalibrate, a bit like the military, around what contingencies we have for emergencies like this. We are much better in terms of broader energy, though, Michael, in that this is why you invest in renewables. We've got a lot of renewable energy coming into the circuit that our sun, our wind, etc., enables.
But it's very interesting, going back to the Iran war rather directly, fair bit of commentary at the moment that this might be, in a sense, the last gasp of the US empire as we knew it, even if they can reasonably claim some sort of victory at the end of the day, it might be the last one. Some commentators have pointed to the British experiences in South Africa when they sort of wiped out the Boers in the Boer War in 1899 or thereabouts, but they didn't really win that war. Their involvement in that area crumbled immediately afterwards. They lost authority, they lost respect, and the same's being said here. I mean, many of us, certainly I've been for a good 10 years or more, identifying what I've thought is the decline, if not the fall, of the American Empire. But what do you make of that thesis? Don't you think Australia, like the Canadians and most of the European, Western European countries, realise that they have to start thinking differently geopolitically?
I think that's a really interesting point, and we are seeing one of those extraordinary periods. I'm not going to predict the complete demise of the US empire, if you like, because what we know about empires is it's probably more common that they decline than that they just collapse. But what we saw the last week or two, where Trump was trying to call for allies to help him with the Hormuz Strait and not getting much response, is really fundamentally different from most US presidents who've had a lot of help from Western Europe in these circumstances. Even George Bush, who went into Iraq with that most people would say is a war of choice and wasn't necessary, and all of those things got fairly wholehearted support from the UK at least. Some of the other Europeans weren't so keen. Even the UK appeared really reluctant to get involved in this war. And even Australia, we're one of the US's closest allies. I think, if you look between the lines, Albanese and Miles are kind of squirming. They would rather not be involved. And, so across the board, you've got Trump who's bagged out Western Europe for not getting involved. Then he's attacking China, Australia, and what was the third one? There was a third one on social media for not getting involved, including Japan. I mean, you're not going to get much closer ally in the Asia Pacific than Japan. And Japan, of course, has a pacifist constitution, which makes getting involved in those conflicts extremely difficult. So he really is acting alone. I mean, obviously, he's got Israel side by side, but the other allies are much more reluctant. And this is a combination of 3 to 4 years of tension between US, particularly since Trump took over beginning of last year. But there was already tension about Ukraine, even under Biden's leadership.
Martin, I think, if my memory serves me right, tomorrow is the end of the third week of this new Iran war. 21 days. We were told it was going to be open about this period, weren't we?
Yeah, I still think I've not seen any indication that Trump wants this to be a long war. He sort of oscillates between saying that the job's done completely, or it's almost done, and we'll wrap things up. But he's certainly not projected that this will be a longer one. Of course, reigning in Israel might be another whole story, who seem to be pursuing regime change. But I suspect, as I said before, that he's going to try and wrap this up in some way, shape, or form. But the longer it goes on and the messier it's got, the harder that is to claim success.
Well, it's more than that. How do you get out of it, let alone claim success? I mean, if he says to the Iranian leaders, let's sit down now and work out tactical withdrawals for everybody and agree that we're not going to do any more bombing, I suspect the Iranians would say, well, I think this guy's capitulating. Do what you like, Trump. We're not going to even talk to you.
For the Iranian regime, their one core aim is to survive, I think, and obviously to inflict some pain on the US or its allies through various alternative means. The attacking of the Emirates and Qatar and other such things. So their goals are probably a little bit more modest, lower bar. So they can claim some degree of success regardless. I mean, of course. Their ability to strike back is—it's an asymmetric conflict. So for them, just emerging on the other side would be some form of victory, I'd imagine.
There's going to be a heck of a lot of rebuilding of these places. Do you reckon the Americans had sort of set up a fund to help fund the work that needs to be done in Iran?
Certainly not in Iran, unless you've got some regime change. That would not happen. But they're going to face a lot of pressure from the Emirates and Qatar and Saudi Arabia, who have been steadfast allies of the US and who allow them to have their bases there. And that's why they got attacked. They'll have their hand out for sure.
Well, people keep saying that the Gulf States, in some ways, the glorious bubble has burst. People running off there to live fabulous lives, the influencers, the people with money protecting their stuff, and that this will all disappear. What should we start to think might happen with these Gulf States? They have again shown themselves to be strategically important in a geopolitical sense.
I think that they have always been important, and perhaps some people underestimated their importance. And they've got every reason to be, like I said, lean on Donald Trump now, because without them providing the US with lots of logistical support, the US's influence across that region would be greatly diminished. So, now, the word on the street is that Trump has, we ask who's Trump's talking to, is that he's been talking a lot with Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, and Qatari and Emirate leaders. So they've got skin in the game, clearly. So he has to respect that. Now, Mohammed bin Salman's an interesting character with an interesting past, Michael. And we know Saudi Arabia sees Iran as the major regional rival in the region, in the area. So they wouldn't have been disappointed about the overall conflict, but they would be absolutely worried about the pushback and the risk to their energy infrastructure.
Well, yes, the Shiite and the Sunni contestations in that sense go on and on, I suppose. So, Martin, you've been on the side, as I heard you, that thinks this conflict in relation to Iran is going to wrap up sooner than later. Sounds like you're still of that mind. You and I get it. Trump keeps saying things that makes you think that, but I must say I'm simply unconvinced.
Well, you have every reason to be, because despite those statements, that hasn't happened yet. I guess we'll see, and I think it just comes down to if there is another elements that we don't always see, and I think domestic politics still really matters to Donald Trump, and I think there's definitely a lot of unease in America at the moment at the possibility of much higher costs for everything. It's not just fuel. Because the US does their own drilling, of course, at the moment. But the global supply chain makes everything cost more. And if there's one thing that Trump wouldn't want to upset too much is American consumers.
And I suppose coming back to the beginning of this podcast, Jim Chalmers's job is much or even more than the Prime Minister's is to try and settle the Australian hip pocket nerves.
Yeah, certainly. And we know that in Australia, when it comes to the fuel supply, that hasn't actually changed. No one has suggested that that's actually changed right now. It may well do, of course, if the conflict continues. But people have just started panicking and buying more because they're worried about this, which is a natural human condition. So part of what Chalmers needs to do is actually reassure people that he's got a plan and that he can re respond accordingly to a series of events that he can't entirely foresee.
Jerry cans have become the new toilet paper, Martin.
I think there's a good analogy there. I mean, the toilet paper never during COVID, the supply of toilet paper wasn't really interrupted so much as the demand just skyrocketed. And because supply stayed the same and demand skyrocketed, there's no toilet paper on the shelves.
The whole thing's crazy, Martin. I think I'm going down the beach to think all of this over. Thanks for joining me today.
A pleasure as always.